Hello, it is September 24th, 2024, and welcome to Tech Corner, which will be posted on the Solari Report site on September 27th. Hello, James, how are you?
Oh. Oh my God. Good. Good.
Tech problems, right?
Yeah, I had some of the weirdest tech problems I've ever seen. I'll go into it in a further tech corner sometime.
Right. Well, I've had my own tech. I can't send my own emails from my ISP on my alternate computer. And
Really?
the company says that they're not responsible for using third-party services. So I can't send it from my iPhone, and I can't send it from the software. I have to go into webmail, but
Duh.
and apparently it has to do with their settings, not my settings, which they've
Yeah.
screwed up. But what
What
can
I
you
think
do?
is what they're trying to do is centralize more and more of the app closer to them than you.
Well, it's really pissing me off because I can't respond. I mean,
Yes.
that's the only thing that I only emails that I get on my cell phone, because I don't have Solari emails on my cell phone. Because I don't want them hacked, and I can't respond to those on my cell phone. So anyway, our first question is just actually a reporting back of implementing what we advised last month, and our subscriber tried what we suggested in to get him to be able to load LibreWolf, and we said create or import your first project. Create, import, group name. This field is required. Your project will be created at GitLab. So you gave him some advice, and he writes back, he or she writes back and says, I submitted a Tech Corner question about LibreWolf being inaccessible. I just want you to know I was able to load it directly from Firefox and that I love Yandex. Thanks for your suggestions. James suggested Yandex as a way to do a search and not get censored, not go through whatever the filter of Google is, I guess, in a search. So,
Right. It's still a Chrome-based browser, but I will tell you that it has the best red pill searches or search results you'll ever find. It's absolutely amazing because I was getting sick of getting all these blue pill search results. So I found Yandex, and Yandex, yes, it does have a Chrome-based core, and yes, it is from the Russians, but I will tell you it is absolutely great if you're looking for red pill material.
I was just looking at some statistics on Statista, which we subscribe to. And according to Statista, something like 91.4 something percent of the search engine market is Google. And another, call it 3.5 or 4% is the Microsoft search engine. So that will tell you that there's a monopoly. And what can you say?
Yeah, that's absolutely, dismal.
Yeah. Okay, the next question is the comment is an article. Ford files patent to spy on drivers. It's from Armstrong Economics. Car insurance rates in the United States spiked 26% last year, which is partly due to car manufacturers sharing ride data with insurance companies. And this says in September of this year, which I assume this is this year, that means like this month, but even if it's a year ago, this September, Ford filed a new patent to eavesdrop on drivers. They plan to share this information with third parties to personalize the advertisements riders hear. Ford will also take the driver's destination into consideration to determine location-specific advertisements and suggestions. The technology will factor in the weather, traffic, and all external sensors to fine-tune when and what to market to passengers. And basically, it's saying that they're using your microphone. One de driver demanded that LexisNexis, which apparently has a contract on this, send him his personal report, which was a 258-page document containing every trip he or his wife took in his vehicle over a six-month period. They said that the data would be used for insurers to use as one factor of many, yeah, right, to create more personalized, quote-unquote, insurance coverage. But cars have microphones and people have all kinds of sensitive conversations in them. Cars have cameras that face inward and outward, a researcher from Mozilla Foundation told the Los Angeles Times. In fact, 19 automakers in 2023 admitted that they have the ability to sell your personal data without notice. Law enforcement may subpoena these records as well. So be warned if you have a car of any recent vintage. I drive a 2006 Subaru.
Amen. Amen. All I can tell you is that this is beyond Orwell's 1984. Beyond it, way beyond it. And there are more than one person that has had their insurance rates jacked up because
there's actually a lawsuit out there that we talked about on another tech corner.
And I'm shocked it's only one.
I know. Okay? There was this kickback scheme. I want to say it was GM, I'm not sure which car company, but they were kicking back to the salesman for putting in, I think it was the OnStar system, which apparently is not the most recent, whatever. But the salesmen were hooking up to the cars without telling the people who bought them that they had this information that was being sent to their insurance company. And somebody who got an increase in their insurance premiums sued, and I have not heard of any results of the lawsuit.
Oh my god, oh boy.
Okay, the next one is Unitree's $16,000 G, I think it's G1 robot.
Yes.
Talks, jumps, dances, and wants to be your roommate. This is from hothardware.com. Robotics manufacturer Unitree has publicly announced the availability of doomsday humanoid robots for less than what it takes to buy the cheapest car in the U.S. That's for the base conscript model, of course. Buyers will have to shore up if they want greater computing power, increased strength, articulating hands, and battle armor. For more peace-loving buyers, the Unitree G1 will be able to help out with household chores or projects such as cook a meal, solder like a master electrician, and replace you as your children's new parent. You know anything more about this, James?
Well, all I can tell you is, like, the idea of this type of robot helper is a wonderful concept for all the things you just mentioned, okay? However, if you like exploding pagers and walkie-talkies, then you're going to love an out-of-control robot rampaging about. So the question is, who validates these systems are safe, that they can't be hacked and used against you? So,
well, or spying on you.
That's a given.
NSA, the CIA.
That's what your car's for. So anyway, so let's be clear. We are going to have the opportunity to purchase a Chinese-made robot that has the potential to vacuum up all your data, capture all your keystrokes, record video of everything you do, and map your living space down to the millimeter, because they have something called LIDAR, okay? So that when they go into the room, they measure all the spaces in your house and create maps of everywhere they go, okay? Plus, they can terminate you with extreme prejudice if so instructed. So I'm sorry, I'll pass. Okay. Technology is like anything else. A shovel is for digging holes and gardening and that kind of thing, but you can also use it for a murder weapon.
Well, so and they're making you pay for this.
Yes. Yes. And so you have the ignominy, have to live with the ignominy of this device gobbling up all your information. If you think that one item of secrecy. If you type on your keyboard, it can pick up the keystrokes from your keyboard. If you talk on your telephone, it can record on your and everything you're saying on your telephone. My guess is if it's close enough, it can record everything you're doing over your computer or your cell phone.
Or who okay? you're talking to in your house.
Yes. 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 This is a CCP dream come true. And like I said, for $16,000, I'll pass. But you know, it's if indeed this had been QA'd so that only the owner could operate it and do things like take out the garbage and wash dishes and solder things or any number of those things, it'd be amazing and a wonderful buy at $16,000. But you have to look at the other side of the coin, where this thing could be a deadly weapon.
Absolutely. Speaking of which, the next one is Lebanon is rocked again by exploding devices as Israel declares a new phase of war. And this is from MSN. You wanted to talk about this yourself, right?
Yeah, this is. So we have several, we have like four stories on this.
Right.
And first off, the chances of someone getting a bomb outside of the targets is like 1,000,000 to 1, because they were very, very careful to make sure these the Hezbollah fighters were the ones that got the payloads. So the reason Hezbollah went to pagers and handheld ham radios was in 96, Hamas, the chief bomb maker, got the Israelis were able to weaponize his cell phone and blow that up. Not to mention that smartphones were also the IDF's main source of intel. They were just taking all the information from the cell phones and putting it directly into their war plans. And they figured out everything Hezbollah was doing from their bloody cell phones. So pagers and handheld radios can't be pinpointed like cell phones. And it was the way to go because they don't have the smarts that a cell phone does that can be used against you.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. The next one is actually a link to the Substack for Dennis Kucinich, who is running for Congress in, I want to say it's the 7th District, but in Northern Ohio. I can't vote for him, although I might send him some money because he's one of the few honest
fine man. Yeah, very principled individual.
Yes, but and he's smart. His Substack points out that now that we've found out that one can rig something like a pager or a cell phone to explode, that means that we no longer have a communication system with integrity.
Well, that was much the case before this happened.
But we didn't know.
Right. Well, right now, I guess I don't think there's any manufacturers on the planet right now that'll take a contract from the IDF. have them license their equipment for manufacture via the IDF. But unlike killer drones and exploding cell phones, at least killer drones and cell phones can be a lot more selective. And this style of warfare was about as precision as a hand grenade. You know, it didn't matter. So of the thousands that were injured, I think there were approximately 37 killed. How many non-combatants, including women and children, has yet to be ascertained? Okay. So what this did, this was probably the best recruiting platform or event for Hezbollah. Because for every one person they killed and injured, there will be four people standing in line to join Hezbollah now. So this has just caused that theater of war to get much more hot.
Right. Well, on the subject of, couldn't somebody give you a gift that is rigged to explode?
Oh yeah. Well, so let's go. So I'll go into the guts of this later, but it was the battery that did all the damage. Okay. The what they did was they had to take out part of the battery and put in some about 1 or 2 ounces of explosive, and they had to rig a signal wire to be able to send current from the battery to the explosive, because that connection doesn't exist natively inside of a pager or a handheld ham radio.
Yeah, those are basically dumb devices as
That's the selling feature. They're dumb.
Right. So imagine the space they would have to do this technical thing in.
Yeah, it was well done. It was a true bit of sharp engineering. It really
now,
was.
Do we think it was remotely detonated?
Yeah,
or
let's get in. There's another story down the page I'll get into that about.
Okay, well, on the subject of giving gifts that could be rigged, apparently Elon Musk gave some kind of vehicle, a Cybertrucks, to some Chechens, and they were using it, and he basically remotely disabled it, and they were furious. This is a story from Zero Hedge, so.
Well, okay. Now, electric vehicles are very, very fast. They have a very linear torque curve, so that when you stomp on, excuse the term, gas, there's a very linear transfer of energy to the tires, so it doesn't spin out like an internal combustion vehicle would. However, they just don't have the range that a internal combustion engine does. So the U.S. Army developed a hybrid Hummer. And what they did is they used the electric side to approach the battlefield, forward edge of battle, stealthily. And then when the hostilities began, they would crank on the diesel engine so that it would have, you know, that much more power to operate everything on the vehicle. Let's look at the fact that Musk can shut down your very expensive electric vehicle on a whim. Think about that. You're our buddy Elon Musk, if he doesn't like you, can turn off your vehicle remotely. So be very careful. Be very careful what you say on X.
that begs the question, though. Why was Elon Musk making gifts to Chechen warlords?
You know, I've yet to see any of those guys at the country club. I really haven't. So you gotta wonder where he hangs out. You know.
What can you say? The next one is HRCC, handheld radios used in explosions against Hezbollah. From Ham Radio Crash Course YT channel, it appears that only the batteries were weaponized with a few grams of something equivalent to PETN. How much smarts the battery modification had is still up for debate. It may have been a straight timer, but I'm guessing that the bomb may have been smart enough to know when a target was in the kill zone.
Yes, this is my comment. So the question is, the technology of smart exploding battery that had integration detonation signal connection was just half of the effort. Okay, just half, which was quite a bit. The more intriguing question was, how did the IDF pollute/infiltrate the Hezbollah communications supply line? That's the $64,000 question. You have to get the modified battery. You know, you have to have somebody that's going to. So let's say they have a central supply. Okay. They had to have someone in central supply that knew these things were rigged and that the proper guys got the things that had the bomb in them, period. So the Hezbollah attacks put a spotlight on the Israeli cyber warfare unit 8200. And the story that Reuters did a great story about 8200, it's the equivalent of the NSA, and it's in charge of what's called signal intelligence, or SIGINT. This is the unit that our buddy Bill Binney came out of, okay? So signals intelligence they've been around since the 1950s, unit 8200. Note how this one Reuters story, which is in here, points out that they were using coded signals. Now, this is this is why they probably used a coded signal, because they wanted to make sure that the targets were close. They
to the
wanted
draw.
To make, right. You know, let's say you put this, go through all this trouble and put this booby trap in these devices. You want to make sure that your target's close enough to get the full brunt of the explosion. There had to be somebody listening or observing the pager traffic and or the radio traffic to know that these guys were using these devices when they sent the code to blow it up. And what was interesting is the other part of the battery explosive was the ham radios allegedly had a pin, a free signal pin, that they could use that circuit to get power from the battery into the explosive and cause it to detonate. So that infers that these things were modified not only hardware wise, but also some sort of software, okay, to be able to sit back and know that this, when this signal came in, it would activate a switch and detonate the bomb. So how they did it is not quite clear. And this is all, you know, subject to conjecture at the moment, but it was a very, very well planned out. I think they started at least over a year ago to do this. Now, Israelis, Unit 8200 are kids they pull out of high school. So they're not looking for old tech types with old ideas. They take kids right out of high school. They give them the equivalent of our ASVAB or military aptitude test. And if they have very high scores in tech, they're recruited into 8200. No
this
degrees.
This is Israel, right?
This is Israel.
Right.
So the people that did this were between 18 and 20 years old. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. So this goes into the next question right below it. So
Tommy, go ahead. Have you explained what PETN is?
Yes, PETN is the equivalent or a less stable version of C4. C4 is the U.S. military's plastic explosive, and it's extremely stable. It takes detonation cap to blow it up. PETN is less stable. And there were a couple of other plastic explosive candidates for this scenario, but they're still trying to figure out, you know, what exactly they used in this attack.
Now, presumably, they don't have any examples of these batteries or of the pagers before they were blown up, which means that they don't have something to look at or don't have much.
Well,
to look
no.
At.
Well, what happened was is that the company they licensed, I believe, the pagers came from Apollo Gold, which was a Taiwanese pager company, and they said, "Hey, can our Hungarian manufacturing company get a manufacturing license?" And Apollo Gold said, sure. Okay. And so a Hungarian company allegedly manufactured the pagers. Now, I think it was an Icon 87 or Icon 27 was the name of the handheld ham radio. And those have been out of production for, geez, I'm like 10 years now. So they were able to get a hold of Icon, and I think that's a Japanese company, and it's ICON, Icon, and do the same thing. Okay. So I doubt seriously.
Where would these people have bought them if they're not productions anymore? Well,
my guess is that is the inside job. So whoever was working with the IDF to get these into the Hezbollah supply chain.
Assuming okay. It was IDF.
Right. So had to have an inside person to be able to bring these units or deliver these units to the targets they intended. Now, we don't know how many of these were made. Are more of these just laying around? Quite possibly. Okay. I think they're where they are. They're probably sitting someplace in the Middle East or in Eastern Europe is my guess, but that's only a guess.
Well, you would think that they may find some that were not actually sent to somebody, right?
Yep. That's a, my guess is those, my guess is any of those units is under strict, let's say the IDF was the culprit in this, I guarantee you they have those things under lock and key. Guaranteed.
Well, do you think that they could assure that every single one of them blew up, that they didn't have?
No, there is that chance. There is that chance. But the question is, what else is Unit 8200, the NSA, MI6, working on that can kill and injure someone remotely? That's the question.
Well, and you want to know whether the NSA or the MI6 had anything to do with this.
That's a very good point. They could have used some of our intel air assets. We have, the United States has, and correct me if I'm wrong, we have the R-135, which is a jet-based flying cell phone tower that when it flies over, your phone will log into it like a cell phone, and it will extract every bit of data it can. Or that's the Air Force version, and the Army version, I believe, is the R-35, and it has it's prop-driven, and it flies lower and slower so it can suck more data with less gasoline, okay? So the next question is the rest of the world, including the U.S., being surveilled by this very questionable Unit 8200?
Oh, well, that's interesting. I was thinking about Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which is half an hour, 45 minutes away from me.
Right.
Flying one of these things around Cincinnati, Ohio.
Well, but if you want a real dissertation on where all these spy planes are across the world, I will recommend, and I'll put this in the link, the Monkey Works channel on YouTube.
So they actually have these? That can they tell what kind
of... Oh, yeah. Well, what he does is he does a very good... this gentleman was Air Force, and after he got out of the Air Force, he went into the military industrial complex logistics branch, or, you know, department, where he spent 25 years. He knows who's doing what, where, so far as he supplied all these planes, as well as knows their functions quite well. So on his channel, he has a segment for the R-135s, which is the Air Force jet, and the prop-driven Army R-35, and where they are. And typically, these things will go up, and they'll do an oval over Cincinnati, Ohio, or during the election recount in Arizona, they had one flying over downtown Phoenix every single day, okay? In a racetrack pattern, sucking up all the data from every wireless device they could get to log into their network.
Does it have to be a wireless device?
Yes.
Well, so why should the election computers have access to wireless devices?
No. What they were doing is probably surveilling the people that were doing the recount.
Oh.
All that.
So they
all
couldn't
their...
hack the computers with that.
I would say that wouldn't be too much of a stretch for them. Our military has extremely advanced capabilities so far as hacking the back. They know where all the back doors are on all the, you know, residential, commercial, electronic equipment.
Right.
Right.
Well, and we know that technology that we can read about is way behind what technology out there and behind, you know, the black ops, the classified stuff that the government is paying grants to some of the top scientists, and they have to sign NDA agreements, non-disclosure agreements, and so there's all sorts of technology that's not disclosed to the public for years, or if ever.
Correct. Absolutely yeah. correct. Number nine on the script is the best compilation link for the Israeli cyber warfare. It's from TRT World. Please take a look. I would suggest that everybody read all of the links in the script and be familiar with what happened. Should you fear purchasing a handheld ham radio or pager? No. However, that being said, you should be able to inspect a battery for a suspicious signal wire leading to a potential switch that connects to the battery. And so let's go into this very, very quickly. A battery is a two-wire device. It has a positive and negative connection, and that's all it should have, especially in any mobile handheld application out there. Okay. Now, your power supply under your desk has a USB connection, but that's only to be able to, you can monitor it, and via the app that controls the your UPS, you can do a few bells and whistles with it. But a battery that's been tampered with is going to have a signal wire. So typically, there are two things in all electronics. You have power and you have signal. And if your battery has a signal wire coming out of it, you should go, okay.
So you're saying it would be a wire.
Right. They would be a wire, because if you have a rechargeable battery that you can just take the battery or the cell phone and stick it in its recharging base or plug it in with the USB, then yeah, what recharges the battery is a voltage regulator that measures what the battery status is, and it'll cut it off when it reaches a certain voltage. But that's the smartest thing that should be in a handheld device. Now, if you have a secondary wire going into your battery, or two wires going into your battery, that would be a bit suspicious. I am not familiar. Now, I'm not saying there isn't something out there like that, but I've never seen a battery in a handheld device that had more than just two wires going to it, and it was strictly for power.
But okay? James, you can't just look at the battery of a cell phone.
No. You see, the good news is that there's no room for explosive cell phones anymore. Mm-hmm. Maybe in 1996 there was.
So
but
it
now
has to be something that's big and clunky.
Right. Well, again, you'd have to get in there. Now, would it be impossible? No, you could, but your battery life would be next to nothing, or be very truncated. Okay. And, your battery app would probably moan and complain that your battery wasn't up to charge.
I see.
So those are the things. So it's, anything is doable. I believe Admiral Rickover once said, nothing is impossible given enough time and money. You can do anything. But are you willing to spend the time and the money to do so?
Right. And by the way, I think that's ultimately going to be item 8 in this script, because we deleted it.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, the final one,
which I believe is to the best of the bunch.
Yeah, this is what if you're going to listen to one of the links, this is the one to listen to. Another from the great Naomi Brockwell, and it's entitled "You Have No Medical Privacy." And it is about the HIPAA, basically. And HIPAA is, they even have it wrong. It's HIPAA rather than HIPPA. And Health Insurance Portability something and something Act. And people think that HIPAA is to protect your privacy. Well, they may tell you that, but in fact, HIPAA is a methodology to spread your medical privacy all over to one of a couple million entities that qualify under the definition of who can receive the information from the originator of the health information. So you've got your healthcare provider.
Could you please say that number again?
Couple million. 2.2 million entities in the United States, somebody estimated, would qualify under this definition. So all that has to happen is the originator or the person who, the entity that is holding the your healthcare information for purposes of helping your you medically, for example, the hospital or your doctor, that person can only disclose the information to a blah, blah, blah. I don't know what the definition is, but there someone has estimated that there are 2 million entities in this country that would qualify under that definition. And so it is within the discretion of the healthcare provider or the originator, the person who's the entity that's holding your information for legitimate purposes, to give it to somebody else. So I know as an attorney that if I want to get healthcare information for discovery purposes, I have to get the person whose healthcare information I want, which is usually the defendant or the plaintiff in a case, I have to get that person's sign off on a HIPAA document releasing it. But that is deceptively, makes it look deceptively private because there are other, you know, another 1,900,000 whatever thousand other entities that might have that all information already. So basically what you need to know is that there are advertisers, there are all sorts of, all sorts of entities who can be subject to subpoena by whatever government agency for your healthcare information. And of course, the software that you agree to put your healthcare information up on, I forget what that's called, but mine is up there. I haven't had the chance to delete it if I can. But I mean, the bottom line is don't think that your healthcare information is private. So if you go to a doctor who keeps paper records, and I know that there's at least one in Cincinnati that a friend of mine goes to, somebody who keeps paper records and doesn't have much in the way of software to turn in information is a lot safer in terms of not having your healthcare information disseminated. But I mean, at this point, the information is connected to your name and your social security number and probably your address. And so the thing is about all sorts of information that's kept out there digitally is if they have one or two different, like date of birth and social security number, if they've got those two pieces of information, imagine how many places could be hacked in getting your social security number and your date of birth. How many places? I mean, you've done it online. You've given it to all sorts of people, right?
It boggles the
mind.
And
once you gave it out, that you don't know what that person who received it, what data system they put that into.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, it seems to me that none of it can be taken back. I mean, they could pass all the laws in the world and say, you can't collect this, you can't do this with it, you can't do that with it. But if it's already out there in the database, it's too late, right?
Right. Well, the most interesting thing she said was the states have the ability to lock it down.
And Minnesota, of course, that's a going forward thing, but Minnesota is the one state that she mentioned that does have, I guess, the strictest state law, but it's a good idea to encourage other state legislators in other states to do some research and find out exactly what the measures are. Here's the irony. When HIPAA first came out, and Congress passed it, and, you know, who knows how many Congress people and senators actually had staff who read and understood HIPAA. But HHS was charged with writing the privacy part of the regulations. Well, you know, we know that HHS is completely compromised. And, you know, they're probably getting advice from pharma and, you know, the American Hospital Association and all of the medical AMA. So if they're the ones who are writing the privacy regulations, how strong can they be?
Yeah, especially since these people are financially in bed with the people that are making money on your medical records.
Right. But there is some state jurisdiction over, for example, doctor's licenses, nurses, you know, all the people who are licensed in the state, and hospitals are licensed by the state. Hospitals are not licensed by the federal government. So you can imagine that there are all sorts of things that states could have in their requirements. Now, getting it all cleaned up is a completely different matter. But if you're pregnant now and you have, you know, you're going to have a baby that doesn't yet have a social security number, you know, there's still hope for that child.
Okay. Well, that looks like it. I hope that our next Tech Corner isn't as gruesome.
Yes.
And again,
Gene, you were going to talk about ACH and some other things.
Yes. Yes. So folks, we have something at Solari now. It's called ACH, and it's basically automated check.
It's clearinghouse.
Clearinghouse. So if you go to the main page, you can go there and I'll put a link in the notes on this. But you have a top center of the page, the new ACH payment option, which allows you to bypass going through your credit card. So all you have to do is fill out your information, which I'm sure that a lot of you are already using automated clearinghouse payments for, let's say, your utilities, et cetera, et cetera. Right. And this way, we get to bypass our friends at Visa and MasterCard. So,
not
if you
to mention PayPal.
Yes, yes. So all those wonderful entities that have treated us so well over the years, that and you can strike a blow for freedom by signing up for ACH.
And the other advantage is that it doesn't have an expiration date on it the way a credit card does. And what tends to happen, I mean, we lose subscribers who don't particularly intend to unsubscribe, but as soon as their credit cards that have authorized the monthly payment or the annual or the semi-annual payment, when those expire, we have to get a new date from them. And, you know, it gets past people and all sorts of things happen. And it is disruptive in the whole process. So if you go through ACH, you finally enter it. You don't have to send a check, and it comes directly out of your bank account. And we use authorized.net, but it's not the kind of third-party entity the way something called Plaid. I have an online auction site, and I can do an ACH payment through Plaid. But when I go through Plaid, my bank account number actually gets to Plaid, you know, when I make that payment. And this, my understanding is that, you know, it's all encoded and very, very secure. They have to have a certain level, you know, a high level of security clearance in order to do this. So we're excited and hope that this will make our subscriptions process smoother. And it's actually, it's probably cheaper for us than the Visa and MasterCard.
Right. Right. Yeah, the good folks, the Visa, MasterCard, and PayPal.
Yeah.
So anything else, Carolyn?
No, that's it.
Okay,
we
folks.
We'll see you all next month. Keep sending in those questions and comments.
And especially if you find out anything else about the Hezbollah bombing or something like anything that deals with the weaponization of tech, I'd love to hear about it. So please send those links in as you find them.
Right. And HIPAA too. If you've heard of all sorts of HIPAA things that are horror stories, feel free to tell us about it.
Please. Yeah. Any HIPAA bomb making stories, we'd love to listen to.
Right.
So anyway, thank you very much.
Okay.